Good day and welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those of you who know, as I do, that the world's political, religious, military, media, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that many of them are crazier than loony birds, and that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to know who is working against our interests, to understand how and why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning such schemes isn't hateful, it's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to continue to use evidence and reason to explore Paul's letter to the Galatians so that Christians can be freed of his lies. If you'd like to participate in this discussion, our number is 877-300-7645. Before today's program began, as we were listening to the news, Aaron, the producer who participates in sports in the news segment of this show, was telling me that in the previous program that aired on this network, that chemtrails are being blamed for all manner of things. Can you just give me a quick review as to what a chemtrail is and what the conspiracy theorists envision chemtrails achieving?
To give you a brief overview, here's the entry in Wikipedia, which I think covers it fairly well. According to the chemtrail conspiracy theory, long-lasting trails left in the sky by high-flying aircraft are chemical or biological agents deliberately sprayed for sinister purposes undisclosed to the general public. Believers in the theory argue that normal contrails dissipate relatively quickly, and contrails that do not dissipate must contain additional substances.
Now beyond the fact that these trails that come out of jet engines are entirely comprised of water vapor, there's this theory that's fairly well proven that warm air holds more water than does cold air. So when the air, cold air, at 30 or 40,000 feet goes through a jet engine, which is essentially a furnace that heats the air, the expanding air then pushes out the back of the engine, which causes the jet to fly forward, that the warmer air pushed out the back of the engine would hold more water. And therefore you see water vapor. But rather than the reasonable explanation, the conspiracy theorists have decided that around the world now, the U.S. government is secretly manipulating kerosene, the Jet A, that is fed into jet engines, and are using jet engines and the kerosene put into them to deploy a sinister plot that is poisoning people and controlling all manner of things? Is that the theory?
Yes. Believers in the conspiracy theory speculate that the purpose of the claimed chemical release may be for solar radiation management, psychological manipulation, human population control, weather modification, biological or chemical warfare, and that the trails are causing respiratory illnesses and other health problems.
Now, while I don't want to demean all conspiracy theorists and sweep them all under this this same rug, that is really stupid.
I think this one may have caught on because it is fairly widespread. It's one of the more popular conspiracy theories that I hear. I think this one may have caught on because it's fairly simple. Look in the sky. There's that. It can't possibly just be a normal contrail, so let's say it's sinister for some reason.
So the contrail. What is contrail short for? Con is for condensation, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, condensation. So, unaware of how the jet engine works, unaware of the nature of air and water saturation, completely unaware of how weather phenomenons are generated, they've come to this conclusion. And we wonder why it's so easy to fool people in this country? I mean, this is so stupid, it hurts.
Well, and as you can see by just the number of different things that it's attributed to, it's doing all of those things at the same time.
Oh, God. Do you know how much of a contaminant just to say that, for example, that the U.S. government was somehow manipulating all of the kerosene supplies in the world, all the Jet A supplies in the world, which, by the way, would be impossible. But let's just say they were. And that rather than putting pure kerosene through to power a jet engine, that they were polluting the fuel with a substantial amount of a non-combustible agent. And that the jet engines, by the way, didn't know the difference, and they performed just the same, even though the combustible nature of the fuel was somehow diluted. Do you know how much, in terms of parts per billion, you'd have to put in terms of contaminants in the air at 40,000 feet for it to have any influence over anything? I mean, you'd essentially have to create a mega volcano.
I would be impressed at that point.
Oh, yeah, that's, I mean, it is, oh, my. Oh, my. You know, rather than just deal with facts, people really prefer, I mean, I think they prefer to be misled. The number one show on this network, where the host makes millions of dollars a year, feeding people rubbish because they seem to like to roll around in it. I'm stunned. And if you use, by the way, Evidence and Reason to point out the flaws in patriotism, in religion, in militarism, in politics, oh, no, we don't want to hear that. We don't want to be troubled with information that we would have to logically analyze that would lead to us abandoning our beloved notions.
The beauty in a lot of the conspiracy theories that are like this is that if you do present any evidence, it's immediately just considered to be some sort of cover-up or fake.
So when you, for example, say, why don't you prove it by testing the contrails?
Yes.
And they would say, if we were to have someone to test them, they would be immediately paid off by the government and release false information.
Correct.
So if you explain it scientifically that, you know, it has to do with the nature of a jet engine and it, the heating of the air and the expanding air, creating thrust and of warm air, holding more water than cold air, then if you were to present that idea, then what would be the response? You don't know what you're talking about?
Yes, it would be you don't know what you're talking about, or that's a lie. They would have something. There's always something.
Oh, goodness. You know, it has struck me that the supporters of conspiracy theories are as eager to be deceived as are the advocates and practitioners in religion.
If they're deceived, they feel that they're validated at that point. If somebody is going out of their way to deceive you, then you're getting the attention that you apparently are wanting.
You know, there's a reason that I have viewed conspiracy theory as this giant sinkhole into which all credibility is swallowed. I think that at this point, somewhere along the lines, I think that conclusion is being validated. All right, why don't we turn to ordinary news? But I do appreciate the humor, Aaron. It's not often that you get to laugh at what is being presented on this network.
I didn't mean to derail you, but
I just had to be sure. I was not going to get the laughter out of my voice without somehow sharing with our listeners what the source was. Okay. Now, I'm sure we're going to have a right caller that says that you have no right to call us stupid because of not being willing to embrace our contrail theory. Okay. Is it, by the way, are these the same guys that think that the array in Alaska that is uses I think electromagnetic frequencies
HARP.
To communicate with HARP. Yeah, what they call HARP.
Yep.
Yeah,
HARP, that HARP is very often listed as the whatever is caused, like how they're actually doing it. It's
okay.
It's HARP.
Okay. So a HARP, which is was created for an express purpose, and that is that the U.S. wants to have secret means of communicating with its submarines that cannot be detected, because the United States, you know, still believes that our submarines perform some kind of an actual function, and it was conceived to do that. But it bounces the communication waves, you know, up on the atmosphere, and they come back down into the very, very long waves, and they come back down into the ocean. These are the same guys that will routinely have experts on that explain that these electromagnetic waves from this tiny little facility in Alaska is actually controlling the weather worldwide.
Yes, I believe Jesse Ventura did a fairly extensive TV show or documentary on it.
Wasn't Jesse Ventura the governor of your state?
He certainly was. I was probably 10 or 11 when he was elected, but yes, he was.
So the people of Minnesota, which are well-educated, I mean, it's a very prosperous state, voted for that idiot?
This was before he began his now fairly notorious career of doing things like investigating HARP. I was pretty young when it happened, but I do remember asking my parents about it probably when I was, I don't know, 15, 16. And they both basically said, yeah, I voted for him. And then when he did his, ceremony, his induction ceremony, I believe it was pretty eccentric, and they almost immediately regretted voting for him.
So what they were done is they were just fooled. I mean, Jesse Ventura was no different when he was elected than he is now. It's just that he's become a celebrity. Went from being a celebrity, I think, wrestler. Wasn't that it?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, so
he's
an actor.
Professional wrestler.
Yeah, professional. Yeah, professional wrestler.
Professional.
Yeah. That's funny. Oh, boy. Okay, well, when we return, we're going to actually cover the alarming spread of polio in the Islamic world. And what is causing it, and what its consequence is going to be. Either that, I guess, or we could talk about conspiracy theories. We'll be back after the news. Alarmed by the spread of polio from conflict zones, they say on three continents, it's really on two. The World Health Organization declared an international health emergency in an effort to contain the disease. A paralyzing virus that was once thought to be eradicated. An emergency committee announced that three countries, and it's really two, Pakistan, Syria, and Cameroon, you can leave it with the first two, have allowed the virus to spread and should take extraordinary measures to stop it. All children in these countries must be inoculated or re-inoculated, and all travelers from these countries should be re-inoculated and carry proof in the form of an internationally recognized document, the committee said. The committee's announcement said that the virus, which mainly affects little children under the age of six, had recently spread back into Afghanistan from Pakistan and into Iraq from Syria, and that there was increasing evidence that adult travelers contributed to this spread, which stands in stark contrast to the near cessation of the disease previously. If unchecked, this situation could result in failure to eradicate globally one of the world's worst vaccine-preventable diseases. Why do you suspect that polio is now prevalent in, let's go back to three countries, in Pakistan, in Syria, and in Cameroon? What is the Islamic population of Pakistan? Aaron, do you know?
I do not.
99.9. What is the Islamic population, percentage of population in Syria? You've got a guess there?
I'd imagine it's about equally as high.
Not quite, because there is a remnant of Assyrian Christians in Syria. They'll not last very much longer, but they represent about 5 or 6% of the population. So Islam only represents about 94% of Syria. Now in Cameroon, it happens to be much lower. Muslims represent about 30% of Cameroon, but there's not much evidence of the virus there. Do you know what the Pakistanis and the Syrian imams have done to the World Health Organization doctors that have tried to inoculate the children in those two countries?
I'm guessing they turned them away.
Well, that would have been preferable.
Or worse.
No?
Yeah.
Worse, they killed them. They murdered them.
Okay.
And they murder them routinely. You know why they murder them?
I do not.
They have a conspiracy theory.
Do they now?
Oh, yeah. Their conspiracy theory is that these doctors are part of a great conspiracy to inject Islamic children with drugs that will cause them to reject Islam. That's the theory.
A drug that causes somebody to reject Islam.
That is correct. That they're poisoning Islamic children and trying to get them to reject Islam and thereby killing Islamic children. That is their theory. And so rather than vaccinate Muslim boys, they kill not only the doctors trying to do this service, but also the Muslim boys who have been vaccinated. It's... Now, as for the girls, of course, they aren't worthy of consideration. And that is the reason that polio has raised its ugly head in these countries and why it is spreading. Now, there's another reason why it is spreading. What is it about Pakistan and Syria that would cause people to come in and out of those countries and spread this horrible disease? What are they busy doing in those countries?
The multiple wars, I would think.
Yeah, being jihadist, right? You know, the great jihad right now is taking place in Syria. And prior to that, it was taking place in Iraq. And prior to that, it was taking place in Afghanistan. And and the Afghani jihadists come from Syria. And the Syrian jihadists come in large part from Iraq. They're going back and forth to fight for Allah. And in so doing, they're killing their own children. It's a pretty lovely scenario, don't you think?
Absolutely.
There is an interesting trail of emails that have been published that should have been sufficient to get Barack Hussein Obama impeached regarding the lies that he deliberately perpetrated in Benghazi. And after the commercial break, we'll speak briefly of them before we talk about what happened in Nigeria yesterday. We'll be back in a moment. Yes, the Freedom of Information Act has required the Obama administration to circulate its internal emails during the night of the Benghazi attack. And rather than trying to rally protection for the Americans that were being assaulted, rather than dealing with the CIA, which the CIA and the U.S. State Department are essentially one, that we're saying that we're being attacked by the terrorist group Friends of Sharia Law, Ansar Sharia, all of the emails that were being circulated amongst the president's propagandists and handlers said that they should emphasize the president's leadership in this area, that they should make certain that there was no association between the president's agenda and mission and speeches and what was occurring, and that they should deflect attention away from the terrorist group. It was all about positioning. There were 12 different edits of the talking points that were manipulated deliberately by the administration to falsely accuse a Christian movie, as opposed to the obvious, which was Ansar Sharia. It was such a horrendous deception. The President of the United States should have been impeached over it. you ought not be able to use the office of the presidency to lie when American weapons are being deployed by individuals who are then exonerated based upon outright deception. And that's what occurred. It has, the Republicans, of course, are tied up in their underwear, wanting to make it a terrorist attack, and saying the president didn't call it a terrorist attack, he blamed it instead on the movie. That's irrelevant. What's relevant is who attacked, why they attacked, and whose weapons they deployed. And also going one step back, who motivated them? And then who exonerated them through the lie? And why the lie was perpetrated to exonerate the actual participants? Those are important issues. It's important to recognize that the president's speech telling Muslims that this was their time and that America would never stand in their way is what caused what is now called the Arab Spring, but is really an Islamic Reformation. It inspired Islamic jihadists. And then America stupidly provided weapons for these jihadists in places like Libya through clients like Qatar. And those weapons, now in the hands of Islamic terrorists, as a direct result of America bombing and killing the secular government, were then deployed against the U.S. We had manufactured and then equipped our enemy. But rather than deal with the truth and acknowledge that terrorism is the product of Islam, the president blamed it on a Christian film because he wanted to create the illusion that terrorism was a product of extremism and that extremism was ubiquitous to Christians. That's what he did. He knew it was untrue at the time. He continued to do it even in his speech 5 days later at the United Nations. The fact is, this nation is afraid to tell the truth, that Islam is a product of Islamic terrorism is a product of Islam. Americans are afraid to shed their ignorance and actually learn who Muhammad was, what he said, what he did. Americans are unwilling to consider what Sharia law actually represents and why it is an integral part of the religion. All of these are serious problems. And our politicians would rather lie to us than they would tell the truth. A car bomb in the Nigerian capital of Abuja killed at least 9 people yesterday. About a month or so ago, a series of bombs killed 70 people in the capital. They were detonated by a fundamentalist Islamic terrorist group, Boko Haram. It's the same group that thought kidnapping 250 little girls and raping them was a good idea. I am not a proponent of class warfare. I do not see a collusion of wealthy individuals. I do find occasionally, though, a indicator that there is enormous disparity in America. And this particular story is troubling to me. Hedge fund managers. Now, this article says heavily populate the so-called 1% in the United States, and they are getting richer. When you designate people who have no affinity of any kind as part of a club called the 1%, you're creating an illusion that serves class warfare. That's a really bad idea. So I would disagree with that aspect of this article. But I would tell you that there is a serious problem with hedge fund managers. A hedge fund manager manipulates stocks and plays stocks to create wealth. They don't earn anything. They don't do any work. They just come up with algorithms that enable them to play the markets in such a way that they create wealth for themselves. Well, it says that the 25 highest earning hedge fund managers in the United States took home a total of $21 billion in compensation. So the top 25 hedge fund managers earned on average of $1 billion apiece. Now, I wouldn't have a problem if the founder and leading shareholder of a company earned $1 billion in guiding their business successfully. But these guys' business is manipulating the shares of other people's businesses. And manipulating may be too harsh a term, but they play with the shares of other people's businesses. They don't actually contribute anything of value. They're not really investing in companies. They're it's like almost placing chits on a gambling table. And moving them around to various numbers, say, on a roulette wheel. But all with their roulette game rigged to the greatest extent that it can be done and still have them not run afoul of the law. They earned that hefty sum in a year when most hedge fund managers fell short of market returns. But, of course, what they're not telling you here is that they only looked at the top 25 that were the most successful, as opposed to the majority who were not. You know, when you gamble, that's the nature of gambling. And they are really legalized gambling in America is either the lottery or the stock market. And when you gamble, there are winners and they make a lot of money. And there are far more losers and they lose money. And so what they're really doing here is saying that hedge funds is a form of legalized gambling, and those who are the winners each year take home an enormous amount of money, while the losers do not. And that would have been a much more appropriate presentation of this story. But nonetheless, by presenting it as they did, they're going to inflame the passions of people, and there's going to be class warfare. We talked about one disease. Here's another disease. It's reported that cancer patients, I know life's full of worry. It's a terrible thing to have to go through. And the pain of stress of needing to take time off from a job. On top of that, this story reads that many are struggling with a huge jump in the average price tag for branded oncology treatments, which have doubled to $10,000 a month in just a decade. During the same period, the consumer price index has raised 23%. So there's several things here that are interesting. One is that rather than attack healthcare where it is broken, where it is expensive, the Affordable Care Act sought only to socialize medicine, to make those who didn't need health insurance because they weren't sick have to pay a lot more with much higher deductibles and much higher premiums to make health care affordable for those who had become sick either through AIDS or through cancer, many from smoking, or diabetes, many from being obese. That's not always the case, but to a large extent it is. But rather than dealing with the reason that healthcare costs are running through the roof, and it is mainly because of liability costs, court costs. That's the reason why these drugs have become more expensive. The lawsuits and the penalties being inflicted upon pharmaceutical companies by governments, and particularly by the United States, have become so egregious that the companies have to charge an enormous amount for their branded, which you should read as their patented treatments. And that the only way they can afford to offer them, considering the liability and considering the fact that the government still requires trials that cost the average drug expense to bring it to market is $1 billion. They have to charge because of the government inefficiency and because of the punitive costs of the legal system. The other part of this I thought was interesting is that The consumer price index has raised, has gone up by 23% in the last 10 years. That's a really a very significant number. That the average price of things in the last decade, where we have been, for the most part, in a recessionary cycle, have risen by 23%. Now, the only reason that the prices of goods would rise by 23% in a recessionary cycle is because the Federal Reserve, in cahoots with the U.S. government, has devalued the currency. And that's exactly what quantitative easing has done. The Fed has recognized no one wants to buy our treasury bills anymore. China's not interested. Japan's not interested. And therefore, the only way to fund the U.S. debt is to create the illusion of funding by creating more money, diluting the monetary supply, and using this increase in the amount of funds available to purchase these same treasury bills. We'll be back in a moment. The jump that is contributing to the surge in global spending on oncology treatments, which reached a whopping $91 billion last year. By the way, $91 billion. When you consider that the U.S. government is now over $4 trillion in terms of spending. I mean, $91 billion is the equivalent of Navalent in today's world. According to a new report from the IMS, the Institute for Healthcare Informatics, the U.S. is the largest segment of that market, with American patients and their insurers paying $37.2 billion for oncology treatments in 2013. So here's the United States. What do we represent? We're 300 million people in a world of 7 billion people. Represent a very tiny percentage of the world's population, and we're responsible for 40% of the cost of treating people with oncology, with cancer. Seems to me that that there is an issue there that needs to be addressed, and simply shuffling who gets to pay the bill isn't the answer. The high cost of some new cancer drugs has raised ethical questions, as more than 100 cancer specialists last year wrote in a commentary that drug prices of $100,000 or more for the treatments could be viewed as profiteering and may be causing financial harm to patients. Profiteering. Now, let's say you're a pharmaceutical company. You're in the business of developing cures for diseases. And between the research that you would have to spend, where you would have probably 99% of that research develop nothing of use, and you're spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year in research, and occasionally you stumble upon something that says, hey, this might have promise. And then you get to spend another $1 billion on that to take it through trials. And it may or may not pass through those trials, even after all that money is spent. And then you, after having spent billions on research and billions on trials, you have a product. And you ought to take your shareholders' investment in your company and offer it free. Is that the idea here? That if you want to have companies develop cures, develop medicines that battle diseases, that the best way to do it is to make certain that they have to spend billions of dollars developing these medicines and then essentially give them away. And you think maybe that's the solution? That is the ethical thing to do? You know, sure, you could nationalize these companies, but then you'd have the U.S. government spending billions upon billions of dollars, even less efficiently, developing these drugs, and then giving them away, causing the taxpayers to go further in debt, billions and billions of dollars. You know, if you think you can enjoy the long lines at the passport office or at the post office, you ought to just love the U.S. government being responsible for drugs. And what are the conspiracy theorists going to say if it's the government that is actually developing these drugs, that they are poisonous? Or are the conspiracy theorists going to be like the Muslim imams in Pakistan and Syria and say, don't take that drug, it's a government plot to poison you? I think Karen told me during the last commercial there was an expert on a show earlier today on GCN that says if you look at one of the Claritin ads for allergies, there are little children with smiling faces in the foreground and contrails in the background with the obvious conclusion that that the allergy medication is profiteering by having the government create the allergens that their product is therefore needed to resolve. I guess we could do that with pharmaceuticals. Sounds like a grand idea, doesn't it? Well, one of the problems, of course, now is that with the Obamacare, there are much, much higher deductibles and much higher co-payments for insured individuals. And so the individual who is already suffering with cancer is now, by government manipulation through the Affordable Care Act, is being required to pay a much higher percentage of their treatment. And, of course, no one seems to be very happy about that.